Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 100 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports for the 100th time. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, and who'd have thought we'd have made it to a centennial episode? You know, it's kind of shocking, if I'm being completely brutally honest with you. I mean, this show started... we can go down to the end, and I'll look at the statistics and stuff. That'll probably be the easiest way to see when we started. But I believe we started back, what, 5 seasons ago at this point? I've only got stats on 18 and 19, but I know we picked games before then. You know, we got the 21 season, 2020 season, 2019 season. It's, wow. Yeah, 2018 is when we started, 18, 19, 20, and now 21. So 4 seasons, whatever. It doesn't make a difference. It's been a long run, and, you know, we've had a lot of fun here. And this is not a send-off episode. We're not going off the air after the Super Bowl or anything, which will be next week, of course. A Super Bowl matchup that we actually predicted. You know, in our 4th season, 100th episode, we can finally pat ourselves on the back. We had Chiefs-Bucks, and we were right. And, you know, it feels like we haven't been able to do that ever. We have never hit the Super Bowl matchup off the rip, you know, at least to my knowledge. I don't believe we have. I mean, I could look back through the years here, but I really don't think we've ever been able to do that before. It's pretty impressive, and look, I get it, you know. Some people, maybe it's not all that impressive, you know, but to me, it's valuable to know that the beginning of the year we had some semblance of a knowledge here. Last year we had Chiefs Saints. Well, we got the Chiefs part right. Okay, well, this year we had Chiefs Bucks. The year prior, if I dive way back, that might be somewhere around one of the episodes in the 40s, maybe? I'm not 100% sure here. Let's see, this is week 7 of that year. If we just go back a couple of episodes, let's see. Let's see, how close were we in our sophomore season, so to speak? You know, we had Steelers-Jaguars. Horrible pick. Completely atrocious. I think we had the Steelers in it in our first season as well, which is also horrible pick. I mean, my goodness, is that a bad pick. That's about as bad as it gets. Constantly jumping on that one, but let's see. The first episode ever, we had a complete homerish Pittsburgh versus New York Giants. We've come a long way. At least I like to think so. If you've been around for one episode, 10 episodes, or the whole 100, I appreciate you being here. Last Word on Sports appreciates you being here. And here's to 100 more, I guess. You know, we haven't been... I mean, on occasion I've mentioned it, but I'll just put the cards on the table. I like to do that. It's a one-man band here, you know. And it comes through, I'm sure, to you guys, and I try to make it as best as I can. But this is my show, and I'm essentially the only person that touches it. I wouldn't reject some assistance, but that's just the way it is here at the network, and I have no problem with that, you know. Running my own thing. We haven't really had any guests throughout our duration. It's just kind of been a one-man band a la, you know. I mean, Jim Rome could do 3 hours, and he's got guests. Well, I only got to do one, so I can do it on my own. Not to mention it allows for a little bit of flexibility in the times that we've recorded and the times that we post. We used to be earlier in the Saturday afternoon. Now we're a loose amalgamous, you know, or amalgus, whatever word you want to use. Amalgus probably works. Saturday afternoon. It could be 2 o'clock, it could be 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Sometimes it's been later into the towards the evening, maybe even 5 o'clock. We did one or two shows early. We did one or two shows on a Friday. We did one or two shows on a Sunday early afternoon. But here we are. Here we are at 100, and, you know, this started when I was still in my college tenure and looking for a little bit of you know, just a place to get some reps in, so to speak, to use the football terminology. And Matt Stopski, who worked for Last Word on Sports, was gracious enough to offer me a position, and I've been here ever since. And who knows what it's going to lead to right now. Obviously, the way things are, it's kind of hard to do whatever. I mean... We'll see where we wind up. Can I guarantee I'll be here in another 100? I don't know, folks. I'd like to think that maybe eventually I might have something to do on a Saturday. However, I won't turn it down because I've had a great time. And it really is, it's fun. It's a passion project, you know. There's no money coming back my way, so to speak. I don't know if that's too big of a glimpse, but I don't really care. What are they going to do? I don't make any money. What, are you going to fire me? Anyway, I'm glad to have you around. We'll look through the episode, probably towards the tail end. We'll look through some of the worst picks we've made. We'll look through some of the gimmicks we've gone through, some of the hard reads we've had, perhaps, as we dive through the episode recaps, and I have them all in a doc. But, you know, it's a big one, and I wanted to thank you all for being here. Even if it's your first episode, you know, 100, that's a big number. Nice, round number. Doesn't really fit in the football equation, all things considered here, because you have 17 weeks of the regular season, then you have the wild card round, divisional, championship Sunday, Pro Bowl, and then the Super Bowl. So it's like 22 weeks, which is kind of bizarre. And then they're going to be going potentially to a 17th game coming in these next, you know, coming years. So we might get to 23 weeks, which is whatever. But either way, that doesn't make a difference. episode 100 starting just like all the other ones. Get a little bit of rambling in there. That's just the way it is. So we're going to do the Standout 7 gag like we've been doing. And we're going to see where this episode takes us. We're going to start off the rip, obviously, with the championship games. Let's start with Tampa Bay and Green Bay. I picked Green Bay last week, and if you remember, I said I was very hesitant. It's one of those can't pick against Brady kind of memes, but at the same time, it's also, I mean, that's really it. And when it came down to it, I think Tom Brady might have had one of the worst playoff games of his career in this game. I may say that genuinely. He missed quite a few throws, and he also threw three massive interceptions. I believe all of them, if not the bulk of them, coming in the second half when they had a huge first half lead. They were up 21-10 at half. That's huge. Game should be over. And he's just throwing the football to the other team. You do the math, you crunch the numbers on the bare bones, and Aaron Rodgers outplayed him. 33 of 48, 346, three touches and a pick, compared to 20 of 36 for 280. Aaron Jones was awful. Look, I'm not a Packer fan. I'm not claiming to have seen every carry of Aaron Jones' career, but Aaron Jones might have played the worst game I've ever seen him play start to finish. Coming away with two fumbles in this one, he was awful, to the point that he was unplayable. Jamal Williams was decent, couple of decent carries, seven carries for 20, nothing huge, three carries for A.J. Dillon. They really got away from the running game, which is something we always see in these playoff teams that have a star quarterback. We saw it with New Orleans before, where they really, not this year, but in years prior, they'd get away from the Alvin Kamara show that got them there. Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, and then Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray. It's what got them there, and they say, oh, we got Drew Brees, Sean Payton, let's air it out. And you lose, and you go home, and this is one of the things that happens. And I'm not saying the Buccaneers were toting the rock like crazy, but 12 carries for 55 when it counted from Leonard Fournette. Chip in an abysmal 10 carries for 16 yards for Rojo. I mean, they wind up with about 75 rushing yards, all things considered. You know, it's close to even, but I think Green Bay really had an advantage with their running game. And even with Vita Vea coming back to play in this game, they probably could have tried to force the issue, but they just weren't interested. Part of me wants to try and rip Devontae Adams, but I don't think it's really Devontae Adams' fault. I mean, the thing I will rip him for is the drop touchdown. Because the drop touchdown directly comes into play in this game. It's a four-point swing. You lose the game by 5 points. They went for two at one point. That was a drop two-point conversion. And it was horrible. I believe the drop two-point conversion was Equanimeous St. Brown. So that right there is 6 points on drops. That's the game. You know, Devontae catches the touchdown. It's 31-30. They kick the extra point instead of going for two. It's 31-31. You know, like, it's bizarre to me. It's, of course, that's the way it goes down. The holding on the pick before halftime that goes uncalled is atrocious. And I'm not saying it was as blatant as the last play of the game sort of hold from the Green Bay Packers defense, but we'll get into that. But the thing of it is, he holds the receiver, then intercepts the ball, which means you're really, not only are you swallowing your whistle to let him play, you see the turnover happen, and you swallow your whistle even deeper down the esophagus. You're fishing it out of your intestine. Like, not to mention, then the Green Bay defense goes full Greg Williams and gives up a deep ball to Scotty Miller. So instead of being down 17-10, getting ball out of half, you're down 21-10. Not to mention, if there was a hold on that pick, you could be up 17-14 or potentially down 14-13. At the least, it's 14-10. It's a huge swing. 14-point swing, in my opinion, because Green Bay had a little bit of a march going. And you could see that coming out because they outscore Tampa in the third quarter 13-7. It's bizarre. I don't think anyone should be blaming the Green Bay defense. Look, they let Mike Pettine go after this one. They're not extending him. They were ninth in total defense. Their defense had a solid game. We talked about how Tampa Bay outran them, but Tampa Bay didn't even run for 80 yards. Like, Tom Brady throws three interceptions in this game. You want to talk schematically before halftime, they give it up. Okay, yeah, they gave up the cheeks before halftime. That's true. They gave up the cheeks. But, my goodness, that is not really, they didn't play a poor game. 31 points, I get it. You're giving up too much. Yeah, but you're playing Tom Brady. You're playing a receiving core that right now, Chris Godwin might be the best of the receivers on their team. Chris, right now, I'm willing to go this far. Right now, there's an actual conversation you can have that Chris Godwin is the best receiver on this team. Mike Evans is a Pro Bowler. AB's a former All-Pro. Rob Gronkowski's an all-time great tight end. They've got some talent in Tyler Johnson whenever he peeks his head out there, whenever he can get on the field. Scotty Miller's a good little speed threat, little dude, you know, a la Andy Isabella in Arizona, a la you've seen plenty of them, you know, not John Brown per se, but cut from that deep threat cloth. I think Chris Godwin might be the best receiver they have on their roster right now, and I think Chris Godwin has a better rapport right now with Tom Brady, than Mike Evans does. And I don't know if that's necessarily a blistering hot take. I might be late to the party, but I haven't heard anyone say it. I'll be completely honest with you. Mike Evans, people have talked about him for years as a top 10 caliber wideout. Maybe Chris Godwin has leapfrogged him a little bit. Perhaps. Perhaps he has. Anyway, on the Mike Pettine thing, this defense intercepted Tom Brady three times. I don't think there's any reason he should be getting the blame for this game. You want to rip Kevin King, and I've seen quite a bit of it, and they make me laugh. One of my favorites was, the Buccaneers scored four touchdowns. Here's three pictures of Kevin King, and he's getting run over. He's getting caught over by Scotty Miller. Here you go. Scotty Miller runs by him. Fournette rolling over into the end zone, rolls over him. And then the Mike Evans fade on Kevin King again. And then a picture of burnt toast. It's intriguing to me. You can have that conversation. King, I believe, was on the injury report before the game, so how hard can I really rip him? But it's one of those things. I get it. That's something you can do. That one, I can't really knock you back too hard. But I can knock you back on the Mike Pettine thing, because I think this defense played plenty well enough to win this game. And I think, ironically, for a team run by an former offensive coordinator, their offense let them down. They had plenty of chances in the third and fourth quarter. So I believe in the fourth quarter more than the third, because they scored twice in the third, obviously. Plenty of chances in the fourth to try and take that run. You know what I mean? They scored 3 points in the fourth quarter, and it's on that late field goal that Rodgers complained about. And look, and we have, I believe, I doggy-eared here. Feel like maybe I had a chance to run it, but there was a guy closing in on me. I thought we were going to have four chances. So instead of running, and this is the play I'm talking about, the third and goal on their final drive here. So on the third and goal, Rodgers rolls. He steps up in the pocket and pseudo kind of rolls to his right, parallel to the line of scrimmage. And it appears to the blind eye, the broadcast view, he can kind of run that ball in. And at the least, if he can't run it in, he can get close. He can get pretty close to getting to the end zone there. And I'm looking at a picture of it here. He's getting chased down by, I believe it's Shaq Barrett and Ndamukong Suh. So Barrett, even if you want to say Barrett's going to catch him, he decides to throw across his body of sorts to a double-covered Allen Lazard. instead of trying to shoot the gap and see if you could win a foot race with Shaq Barrett and maybe dive for the goal line. It's, I don't know, it's hard. It's not hindsight because it's the first thing I was screaming at my television, and I'm not a Packer fan or anything, but I'm rooting for a good game, and it just makes sense to try and run it in there. Raj, it just makes sense. And I don't know, you know, maybe they go for two and they don't get it and they lose the game. Who knows? But to not even try and run and then to rip your coach when, you know, not rip your coach, but essentially rip your coach for kicking the field goal there. Well, you just had three cracks and you didn't even get close, Raj, man. And you've been anemic in the fourth quarter. Look, your offense was catching fire a little bit. You get shut out in the first, second and third, you played great. 23-21 is the scores in the second and third quarter. Packers win. 23-21. The problem is, you're down 10-0 in those other quarters. So he's thinking, I got to put up some points, and my defense has actually been my stronger side of the ball right now. I'm going to put points on the board, and I'm going to see what my defense can do. Do you agree with the call? Whatever. I think it's arguably a stupid call because it's Tom Brady on the other side. I can understand where Coach LaFleur is coming from, however. Does it make mathematical sense? No, it's bizarre and it's dumb. However, you do what you got to do. You do what you got to do. He kicked the field goal because he thought the defense would give him a better chance. Defense had held Tom Brady to 20 of 36 in this game, including the final, you know, shenanigans. I don't know. It's a questionable call. Is it a dumb call? Yes. But can Aaron Rodgers be angry about it? I don't think so. Because the bottom line is, the offense didn't play well in the fourth quarter. They got the ball over and over and over. They forced three turnovers from Tampa Bay. Three, I believe four with a fumble in there, but I'm not 100% sure. Call it three. Call it three turnovers. And what do you guys do? Aaron Jones fumbles twice, gives one of them back, and Rodgers throws the pick before halftime. Bad pick, but it is what it is. Let's talk about the holding on the last play. So here's the problem I have with officiating in sports when they, quote, let them play. Here's the problem I have with playoff officiating. So for the duration of the regular season, which I tend to think, and this could be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong in the comment section, wherever you might be, listening if there's a comment section, or on social media, at Nick Donadic, NikDonadic, as usual, for the 100 millionth time in 100 episodes. Here's the thing. You play by these rules, and the casual fan knows these rules. They're used to watching the game a certain way. That's why everyone's screaming at their TV at the end of the first half. That's a hold. That's PI, right? We've, in the past 2 decades, we've cut down so much on the physicality that is allowed in the game, due in part to safety, due in part to promote offense, right? We want offense. We didn't want Ty Law and the gang beating up on Peyton Manning's receivers at Foxborough and Peyton Manning throwing up a dud, right? We didn't want that. We wanted a shootout like we had at, I believe it was the RCA Dome, when Peyton was down 21-3 and he makes the comeback, or what is it, 24-3, something like that. Huge comeback, great game, one of my favorite games I'd ever watched Peyton Manning play. It was a fantastic comeback because it showed that they did have the guts to make a comeback like that. So here's the thing. When you see at the end of the first half a hold on an interception in a one-possession game not get called in an NFC Championship game, you're thinking, all right, everything is on the table, right? And that ball was perfectly accurate, I would say. That ball was on target, in my opinion, that Aaron Rodgers throw that wound up being intercepted. If there was no shenanigans, to use the Brian Cashman term, if there was no shenanigans there, the ball gets there, it's a catch, right? Or at the least, you know, a drop ball. It's not an interception. If there's no holding, that ball is not intercepted. I can tell you that with 100% certainty. However, the late game throw where the hold occurred, and the final penalty flag was thrown, and of course it was thrown because it's Tommy Boy and you can't rob Tommy Boy, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers advanced to the Super Bowl, first ever home Super Bowl, probably helped with the ratings, yeah. Probably helped with some of that money that we lost because we didn't have fans, but that's just a conspiracy theorist in me. Anyway, so you're thinking that hold was fine in the second quarter, but now we're playing by three sets of rules here. You have normal rules, which is everything that's allowed during the regular season, right? Which is really divided into normal time and clutch time, right? Then you have playoff rules, and then you have clutch time playoff rules. You don't want the ref to decide the game, right? You just did. That ball was about about 2 yards overthrown. Look, could you say, oh, well, if you didn't hold him, we might have got... I don't think that ball's catchable. I'll be completely honest with you. It's a defensive holding, right? It's an automatic first down, sure. But the one in the first half that resulted directly in an interception was fine. So the one in the second half that would have led to a punt, which would have led to all the drama and shenanigans, which when you swallow the whistle, you want the drama, right? That's not okay. And it's similar to the NBA with superstar calls, right? Like, you'll see, oh, somebody gets tapped on the arm, that's a foul. And then you'll see a rookie that nobody's heard of, and he gets murdered going to the basket, and they just tell him to dust himself off and go play defense. You're not going to get that call. It's reminiscent of the Miami Heat-Oklahoma City Thunder Finals, when Kevin Durant gets fouled going up in Game 2. He gets slapped on the arm, and then the arm slaps his leg. He gets slapped twice on the jumper late in the game. No foul call. They lose the game. They lose the series. The monkey's off of LeBron James's back. It's perfect, yada, yada, yada. So the problem with officiating is the thing that everyone lauds about officiating. It's the human factor, right? When you play a video game, theoretically, unless you're playing Madden, you're going to get the accurate calls every time. And the reason I mention that is because in Madden, you can interfere quite a few different scenarios and there will not be a call. There will not be a flag at all. There could be late hits. There will not be a flag at all. Theoretically, if you were going to something, let's go to an easier one to envision. Baseball with a robot strike zone. Every single pitch that passes through the agreed-upon strike zone would be called a strike. Every single pitch. Is that what you want? You know? Now, if you're an elite pitcher, you might think you want it, but you might not. Because you might not realize that, you know, one of those games where if you're Jacob deGrom and you're dealing in the first handful of innings, that strike zone might creep a little bit bigger. Because they think, well, he's been dotting it all day. That's got to be a strike, too. That you see it a lot with highlights of old pitching performances, where nowadays you're like, wow, that's not even close. Back then, it's like, oh, that was a strike. It had the corner. Did it? Did it have the corner? Or is it like an episode of Yes, Dear, where the umpire doesn't realize that the catcher is framing it and dragging it into the zone? My point is, the human error of it makes it so... I mean, look, it's one of those, it makes for sports, you know what I mean? The Galarraga play at first base, oh, would it have been a perfect game? It would have, but oh, he messed it up, and you'll never forget that story. Otherwise, it would have been an insignificant perfect game. You can't have an insignificant perfect game, almost an oxymoron, but it's one that you'd forget about. You wouldn't remember Andres Galarraga's name over the next guy, right? You wouldn't remember him over Mark Burley. You wouldn't remember him over, you know, anyone. You add in the play in New Orleans between the Rams and the Saints when Nickell Robey Coleman blasts the running back out of the backfield. They don't call pass interference. Obviously, you know, overtime, Rams go to the Super Bowl, Rams lose the Super Bowl, whatever. Robbed us of a Breeze Brady Super Bowl. Yeah, it did. It did. And that's the thing. Or you're going to have a situation where, and this is the thing everyone's worried about, the game's going to slow down too much, right? Oh, well, hold on. That looked like it might be a penalty. We got to go upstairs. It's like, okay, well, and we tried the thing with challenging pass interference, and they got rid of it because it's hard. It's a judgment call. And look, I'm going to be honest. It's frustrating, particularly because I picked Green Bay, and I wanted to see, more than anything, I wanted to see if Rodgers had it in him to finally, you know, put together that drive. And I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers had a poor career or this drive would have iced his legacy, but it certainly would have helped if he was able to knock off Tom Brady in an NFC championship game. By the way, he kept saying, you have all these clips of him talking about NFC championships games he's lost. Boy, we got to get one of these at home. Well, you did, and you lost. And you can't really blame your coach for kicking the field goal. You're not going to blame yourself, because look, love or hate Aaron Rodgers, the perception of him from an East Coast fan, the way I've seen him, is Tom Brady-esque. You know, it's, oh, well, it's not my fault. Oh, well, why'd we kick the field goal? Oh, well, why'd we do this? Oh, why'd Aaron Jones fumble? Why'd you throw a pick? Why were you not able to matriculate the team down the field? Matriculate, I should say. Why were you not able to push the ball down the field in the multiple chances your defense gave you? Oh, no, but it's the D coordinator's fault. He's got to go find a new job. Come on now. Come on now, Rodgers. Come on now. Like, come on. Aaron Jones was horrible. And they were talking after the game about, and this is just from my notes, that's why I bring it back again. They were talking after the game, is Rodgers going to retire? He hated the field goal call. Is he going to move on? No. No, he's not going to move on. This is his team. He's not going to go full Favre. So, oh, well, he's our quarterback. We're not idiots. Well, he just drafted a first-round pick quarterback. I wonder who you could have got in the first round of the NFL draft who might have been able to help out in this game. So let's play 2020 hindsight, shall we? We're not in 2020 anymore, but let's do it. So we see Jordan Love. Let's see. Jordan Love goes number 26. Number 26. In the NFL draft. He rides the bench the entire year. Jordan Brooks goes to Seattle. Okay, linebacker. Patrick Queen, pretty darn good linebacker. Goes to Baltimore. Who else we have? We have Jeff Gladney, the corner for Minnesota. Maybe that would have helped out. Running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You probably wouldn't have drafted one, but you never know. T. Higgins, probably would have been a pretty good weapon for this offense. Michael Pittman, probably would have been a pretty good weapon for this offense. DeAndre Swift, change of pace back maybe? You know, where do they go with this pick? Xavier McKinney, who missed quite a bit of this season due to injury, but you never know, might have helped out in that secondary. Yetur Gross-Matos, who's a decent young D lineman for the Carolina Panthers. Let's see, let's keep scrolling here. What else we got? Jonathan Taylor, another running back who probably might have been able to pitch in. You know, they probably don't go running back. That's fair. Cole Kmet at tight end. They didn't know what they had in their tight end. They didn't know what they had, in my opinion, at the beginning of the year in Robert Tonyan. Could Cole Kmet have chipped in? How about a guy on the other side of the field who didn't play in this one? Antoine Winfield Jr. at safety. Might have been able to. How about Chase Claypool, who goes in the second round? You know, he's decent. Is he as dominant as he appeared in that one game? Probably not, but he's decent. A guy like Cam Akers goes here. Trevon Diggs in the secondary goes to Dallas. J.K. Dobbins, big second round for running backs, goes to Baltimore. Van Jefferson, who was decent for the Rams this year. Ezra Cleveland on the O-line. Maybe you need a little bit more depth. Oh, and by the way, in that second round, they're way at the tail end. They take A.J. Dillon, and I think A.J. Dillon is a decent... By the way, Jeremy Chinn was in this round. I think Jeremy Chinn is pretty darn good for Carolina. Might get one of my top five or top three placements for Defensive Rookie of the Year, which we will be discussing next week, of course. So they get A.J. Dillon at 62. So let's look at the running backs taken above A.J. Dillon, who got carries in this game. Cam Akers, who contributed more significantly in the playoffs even. How about a guy like DeAndre Swift, who looked pretty good when he wasn't dropping game-tying touchdowns back early in the season for Matt Stafford. Jonathan Taylor, who took over the head running back duties in Indianapolis. Okay, look, I get it. You don't want to trade up, maybe. You see in the first round, Justin Jefferson goes to Minnesota in division, four picks above your pick. You don't think that aggravates your quarterback? This is a failure at an organizational level, per se. The offense, oh, by the way, you have an offensive coach and your highest paid player is your quarterback, lets you down in this game. But you let the defensive coordinator go. Well, that's how you wind up not in the Super Bowl for the past decade. That's how it happens. You know, it is what it is, but sorry. Number three in the standouts, just to put up the cap on this one, hold on. I don't think Rodgers is going anywhere, personally. I've seen Mike Wilbon. Oh, man, Mike Wilbon's got insiders. Look, I love Wilbon. I love, pardon the interruption, love Tony Kornheiser, but I don't think he's going anywhere at all. But no. And we'll talk about Watson later. Number two in the standout seven, not number three, excuse me. Number two in standout seven, let's talk about Buffalo versus the Kansas City Chiefs. And first and foremost, I want to say that this season, more than the Green Bay Packers, because Green Bay Packers had a good year, but it's a failure, in my opinion. They're a top contender. They don't make the Super Bowl. It's a failure. Buffalo Bills wind up winning, including their playoff games, 15 games this year. They go 13-3. They win two playoff games. They had a great year. They really did. They had a fantastic year, better than anyone could have envisioned. Josh Allen had the best year of his professional career, best year of his football career, period, at a higher completion percentage than he had in high school. This was fantastic. It was expertly done from Brian Daboll to McDermott to the front office. They finally put the pieces in place, and something I've discussed for several teams for years, they need that guy. They go out and they get Diggs. Diggs was that guy. Diggs played better than he has in his entire career, in my opinion. Not like Diggs was a schlub, obviously, in Minnesota, but he really took it to another level this year. He's one of the best wideouts, top five wideouts in the NFL this season. However, they were outclassed in this game. Buffalo settled for way too many field goals when they're playing against Kansas City in Kansas City. Kansas City looked dynamic. Patrick Mahomes, 29 of 38, 325, three touchdowns, 290 receiving yards between Kelce and Tyreek Hill alone. Tampa Bay's defense is going to have their hands full. I know Todd Bowles is a great defensive coordinator, but the bottom line is, I mean, it's going to come down to Winfield Jr. Is he going to be fully healthy? I don't know. He's got 2 weeks to get there. Devin White. It's going to be interesting to me. It genuinely is going to be interesting to me to see, will they be able to cover Travis Kelce, and what will they be able to scheme up to try and take Tyreek Hill away? And we saw early in this one that, you know, Mahomes was willing to go to a guy like Byron Pringle, and they were really willing to give the ball to Darrell Williams. You know, 13 carries for 52 on the ground, one huge run from Mecole Hardman. And even though the fumble early cost them, and they're down 6-0, they were down 9-0 at that point. They give up 6 on that drive because of the missed extra point. Buffalo was good enough to get here, but I think, and we saw it during the regular season, I think I probably mentioned it over and over, Kansas City's just kind of different. Even when Pittsburgh was undefeated, I had Kansas City above them in my power rankings for a reason. Because for all intents and purposes, this is almost the same exact squad that just won the Super Bowl last year. And they played an awful first half in the Super Bowl last year. And then in the second half, Mahomes said, hey, I think I feel like winning the Super Bowl now. And they did. And, you know, the intriguing thing to me that comes out of this is Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs, just doesn't get considered for head coaching positions. And look, the guy's been coaching, his coaching career, back to when he was a grad assistant, dates back to 1981. The guy's 61 years old. He's not too old. Coached under Andy Reid, was a Giants defensive coordinator in 07 and 08. Oh, by the way, Super Bowl. Yeah, that's pretty good, yeah. Then, Rams head coach 09 to 11. Okay, he's doing his thing. Comes back, he's a coordinator for the Giants at 15-17, interim head coach. D-coordinator last year for the Chiefs. Oh, by the way, Super Bowl. And then in his second year here, Super Bowl. Why doesn't he get a shake? And you remember, he was the head coach from 09 to 11 for the St. Louis Rams. So let's take a look at the St. Louis Rams from those years. Because it's interesting to think about here. Because, look, we talk about Eric Bieniemy not getting a shake, and I think Eric Bieniemy should get a shake as a head coach. And there's a lot of coaches that should get a shake. I find it hard to believe Pep Hamilton wasn't an offensive coordinator, even though he was working magic with Andrew Luck in Indy. Did they hit their bumps? Yeah, but whatever. All right, so let's look back. These Spagnuolo teams, he comes in from inherits a 2-15 team. 2-15 team. They go 1-15. They decrease their record somehow. Somehow. Mark Bulger, 32 years old. He starts 8 games. He goes 1-7. 56% completion percentage. Kyle Bowler starts games. Keith Null, who even I don't know who that is. Steven Jackson's still on this team. He runs for 1,400 yards with this awful team around him. He has the most catches on the team. Their leading receiver is Donnie Avery. Really? Really? Okay. Let's take a look at their defense. Obviously, leader in tackles is going to be James Laurinaitis. O.J. Atagwe is still there. Craig Dahl, decent player. Chris Long gives him 5 sacks. Yippee. The team's not good, personnel-wise. Then they take a 6-game jump. They go 7-9. It means second place in their division, mind you, in 2010. Second place in this division. Oh, who came in first place? The Seattle Seahawks, also at 7-9. They almost won the division in his second year. This team led by Sam Bradford, who starts all 16 games. 3,500 yards, nothing impressive. 18 touchdowns, 15 picks, nothing impressive. The impressive number is that he started every game. The running game, 1,200 yards from Steven Jackson, still playing pretty well. Danny Amendola, their new leading receiver, 689 yards. Oh, by the way, he only started six games in this season. Brandon Gibson in second. Daniel Fells. No more appearances from our boy Donnie Avery. On the defensive end, let's take a look. Any changes that are significant? Bradley Fletcher on this defense. Nothing sticking out. James Hall with 10.5 sacks. Chris Long improves to 8.5. Either way. So let's take a look at his third and final year. They go 2-14, and you're thinking, wow. You know, they just couldn't piece it together. It's just, the team just wasn't good enough. And here's the thing. Sam Bradford only plays 10 games, and he goes 1-9. The other six are started by A.J. Feely and Kellen Clemens. Bradford throws six touchdowns in 10 games. They rush for about 1,500 yards, if you include a little bit of yardage from Cadillac Williams, as he's on the tail end of his kind of shine. Steven Jackson goes over 1,000 again. Brandon Lloyd's their leading wideout. This offense didn't really have any playmakers. And I think just as a whole, this team wasn't very good. Robert Quinn busts in with 5 sacks on the defensive end. This is his 21-year-old season. Chris Long improves to 13 sacks. You look at the tackles. Quentin Michaels on this team, acquired as a vet. Darian Stewart is young. Chris Chamberlain makes an impact in this season. Brady Papinga, who's getting a little bit older. Remember that name. Fred Robbins, former Giant, comes in and makes some tackles for him. My point is, none of these teams were good enough to be playoff teams. It's not like he's underperforming. He overperformed with the 7-9 season. That's the problem. The 7-9 season, if that was a 4-win season, the third year would have been low expectations. They won 7 games. And you take a look, they're 1 win away from winning the division. And oh, by the way, who did they lose to in week 17? But the Seattle Seahawks, 16-6. They lose in week 17 with the division on the line. Let's take a look at who they lost to over in Seattle. Charlie Whitehurst at quarterback. Charlie Whitehurst at quarterback. Marshawn Lynch runs for 75 yards. They throw for a 190. Sam Bradford, biggest game of his young career, 19 of 36 with a pick. Steven Jackson, 11 carries, 45 yards. What the guy needed was an offensive coordinator. That's what he needed. He needed an OC who could take over and put in the work. Oh, who was his OC, by the way, you might be asking. You might be thinking, why would Nick set this up? Why would Nick set up this long one? His OC for 2 years was Pat Shurmur. Oh, yeah, that's right. Pat Shurmur, the guy that just fudged his Huggies as head coach of the New York Football Giants. Well, who was his OC the third year? Oh, Josh McDaniels, the guy that went on to be, you know, the guy. The guy that went on to have... who had just come off of head coaching experience where he flamed out, and he got a job there. He got a job working for the Rams. Where did Schottenheimer go after that? He went back to New England. Excuse me, not Schottenheimer. Schottenheimer replaced him. McDaniels goes back to New England, where he's been ever since, and now he's a genius. Sometimes you're a product of the personnel. It's one of those things, and I've had this thought a lot, and I'd genuinely like to pick the brains of a couple of coaches if I ever were able to get some access. I mean, well, that's way down the road. We won't go down that door. That's a long hallway, and I don't know if we have enough time on the show for that one. But I'd love to see. It's one of, you could put a great coach with a bad team, and how much will you improve them? You could put an awful coach with a great team. How much will you realistically sink them? I don't know. I wonder. It's like an analytic approach, and I know people hate analytics and that's the way it is, but I don't mean in terms of a numerical approach. I mean in terms of, like, prognosticating this. I wonder the impact you can have. You know, it's hard to pin numbers onto certain things in sports. That's why certain teams love analytics, because they're attempting to do that and make it more of a, like, a cost and spent model and things like that. You know, like the sunk cost fallacy and things that they use to approach cutting players and keeping players and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's just a guessing game. Why do you think the Packers took a quarterback in the first round instead of all those people we mentioned? Because, I don't know, well, Rodgers can't be good forever, right? Because, oh, well, he's the best guy on our board. Maybe we'll get some value. We'll trade him for something. Look what they got for Garoppolo. I don't know. It's just an interesting thought. So wrapping that up, Buffalo, just not good enough. Sorry, it's just the way it is. Number three in the standout seven, and I'm not sure we'll make it to seven this week. We called this one. We were talking about Matthew Stafford at the beginning of the year as somebody that potentially they should move on from. And look, we weren't first on that one, I don't think. There were people saying they should move on from him straight away. But now, apparently, reportedly, there are at least 10 teams that are interested. So we're going to run through, just really quickly, a list of NFL teams. And we're going to see who might be interested. And we'll start with the easy ones. Buffalo, not interested. Kansas City, not interested. Tennessee, not interested, you'd assume. Indianapolis, should be very interested. We talked about this. He goes to Indy, they're immediately a Super Bowl contender. Baltimore Ravens, not interested. Cleveland, not interested. Miami Dolphins, might be interested. Look, there's reports that that locker room is not sold on Tua Tagovailoa. And if they're not sold, there might be a little bit of a divide going, and you might lose the locker room, Brian Flores. I know, and you opened the door to it. That's the thing. He has to recognize, and we've ripped him for it before, he has to recognize he opened the door to this by benching him for Ryan Fitzpatrick. If they left Tua out there and he just struggled, it's the same thing as the Kurt Warner benching for Eli Manning. Eli struggles, but, you know, he makes a couple plays. The team kind of buys in on him. They realize we don't have a choice. This is our guy. But by benching him and going to the quote-unquote relief pitcher, perhaps because you wanted to get a little bit of job security, I don't know, maybe you were sniffing a postseason run, which never came because of the unfortunate COVID diagnosis, and then they get stomped, curb stomped by the Buffalo Bills in Week 17, which I'm sure had to feel good for Buffalo, beating up on their division rival and keeping them out of the playoffs, especially in a year where they go to the championship game. That had to feel good. You've opened the door. But the thing is, if you bring in Matthew Stafford, which is why I'm saying they're probably a no, he's going to be the starter day one. He's going to outplay Tua Tagovailoa in training camp. He's going to offer a more developed skill set. He's just further along. He's a vet. It's just the way it is. Now we start getting interesting. The Oakland Raiders, or Las Vegas Raiders. Las Vegas Raiders. I would be obligated to say no, right? Unless they're looking to move on from Derek Carr, which I don't believe there's an inclination that they are. So then we get to the New England Patriots, and I feel like they should be tremendously interested because there's no reason to bring back Cam Newton. We saw their offense was much more successful with a true pocket passer. Even in Brady's final year when I ripped them and I ripped Tom Brady, their skill position players were not great, and I admitted that readily then, and I'll admit that readily now. They need to invest in that. I've heard some people say that they could try and invest in a Kenny Golladay and trade for Matt Stafford, and I think that would kind of revitalize their offense. And with all the players coming back, presumably, from the COVID opt-out for them next year, their team could immediately go from 7-9 to 11-5 if they were to make those moves. I'm that confident. Look, their division's going to be harder. The Jets are obligated to be better than the horribleness they were under Robert Saleh. Miami, I think, might take a step back, but that's just an early prediction. We'll see how the offseason goes. And Buffalo might take a step back with a harder schedule. You know, Josh Allen played the best he's ever played in his life. There might be a little bit of a regression. It's reasonable to expect that. So 11-5 could be on the horizon. I think they should definitely be in. I think they should be in on a guy like Matt Ryan, too, if he is somehow available. And oh, by the way, we're going to talk about another QB that's available right after this. We're going to talk about Jared Goff potentially being available, and who should be in on him? Big season, big offseason for quarterbacks. It kind of mirrors next offseason in Major League Baseball is a big offseason for shortstops. Supposedly, there's going to be four or five premier shortstops that may hit free agency. This is the offseason for quarterbacks. I have never seen anything really like this at the quarterback position. Next, we have the New York Football Jets. I don't think there's any reason they should be interested in Matthew Stafford. They're not a quarterback away. They need all their picks and then some if they plan on being a playoff team. They should not be interested. The Los Angeles Chargers, obviously not interested. Justin Herbert is the future and the present. Denver Broncos, you could make the argument that with the veteran presences they have, or veteran presence, I guess. I don't know how you'd phrase that. With the veterans they have on the defensive side of the ball in Von Miller, in Chubb, who's developing, in players like Simmons in their secondary, that team with a quarterback like Matthew Stafford could be a fringe playoff contender. Now, I liked what I saw out of Drew Locke in spurts in the rookie year. Sophomore year, not so much. But if I'm them, I'm kicking the can. I'm going to see. Are they a quarterback away? I'm not sure. I like some of their skill position talent. I'm not going to lie. So I'd kick the can, and I'd see, especially at Denver, at altitude, Stafford could throw the ball about 75 yards flat-footed if he wanted to, probably. I don't know. I'd definitely kick the can. Cincinnati is an interesting one because Joe Burrow is going to be hurt for quite a bit of time with the ACL rehab. I think that's a no. No-go. Jacksonville, also a no-go. Houston, if for some reason they trade Deshaun Watson, maybe they should be interested, but I'm going to discuss that later, so I'm going to leave them as a no. National Football Conference, Washington should be 100% interested. Look, I get it, Taylor Heineke, you never know. He could be the next big thing, for all we know. Or he could have just had one good game against a team that had no tape to prepare against him, and they will try and exploit all those things going forward, and they might go 7-9 again. Put Matthew Stafford there with Scary Terry, potentially, you know, buff up that receiving core a little bit, add that to the young backfield they have with guys like McKissick, with guys like Antonio Gibson, potentially Bryce Love. You know, he was great at Stanford for a little bit, chipping something in. You might be able to improve and really try and take a stranglehold on this NFC East for a handful of years. However, Dak will be back, Dallas will be better, Philly presumably will be better, and you'd like to think, if you're a Giants fan, that the Giants will take a step forward, although we'll have to see how the offseason goes. Right now, as we presently sit, they're probably the worst team in the division, even though they came in second. Seattle, not interested. The Rams, this is an interesting one, and we'll discuss them in a minute with the Jared Goff situation, but if they are interested in acquiring a new quarterback or moving on from Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford wouldn't be a horrible option. You know, if Deshaun Watson's on the market, everyone's going to want Watson over Stafford. Obviously, he's younger, he's more athletic, and all these things. They have, you know, in terms of playoff pedigree, they're all things equal for the most part. Deshaun's probably had a better playoff tenure than him, but, you know, they blew that huge lead against Kansas City and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I would certainly be interested. I would say right now as we sit, Matthew Stafford's a better quarterback than Jared Goff. He's certainly more reliable, but aging QB, big price tag, I don't know. Cardinals not interested. San Francisco should be interested because if somehow, and look, I've heard things about the outs on that Jimmy G contract, you put Matthew Stafford in there, all of a sudden I'm a little bit more confident in this team. I was kind of hazy on them because of Jimmy G, even during their Super Bowl run. You can look back at that one, and it all hinged on him. Realistically, I loved the running game. I loved the defense. You add in Matt Stafford, and their wide receiving core develops a smidge more, or even just with Kittle and the gang they have there now, you're looking right away at a team that could challenge for a division title and potentially the NFC crown. NFC North, Packers obviously not interested. We're not talking about that. The Bears should be interested, but I don't think the Lions would trade in division. Vikings not interested, obviously, because of Kirk Cousins. Obviously, the Lions aren't interested, so we could skip them. Saints, I would kick the can. I mentioned this last week, and that's why we're just skimming through these, because we talked about this last week before the news broke, I believe, that it was mutually agreed upon that they'd be moving on. The Saints should be interested, because I think either way, right away, he gives you much more at the quarterback position than Jameis Winston, depending on the development he's had under Sean Payton. We haven't seen him throw but one pass this past, you know, forever, so maybe Jameis Winston's taken strides that we haven't seen, and they're confident in moving forward. Tampa Bay, obviously not interested. Carolina, stick with Teddy. And Atlanta, stick with Matt Ryan. And if you're moving on from Matt, go with a young guy. Potentially try and trade up. Or actually, they're already so high in the draft, they don't even have to. So the next subject in the standout 7, which will probably put us at about 4, I don't think we're getting to 7 this episode, is the Los Angeles Rams. Because reportedly, it came out that the Rams are going to have an open quarterback competition in next year's camp. Okay, kind of interesting. But considering Jared Goff led them to a Super Bowl, but as I discussed throughout the season, if you weren't here, you know, I'll fill you in. If you were here, thank you, as usual. That he kind of hasn't developed like we thought he would. He had the great year, you know, 32 touchdowns, 12 picks. The year before, 28 touchdowns, 7 picks. We see Gurley take a step back in their offense and health-wise. All of a sudden, he throws the ball career-high 626 times. Completion percentage goes down a little bit from the year before. The interceptions go up, and the touchdowns go down. 22 touchdowns, 16 picks. This year, we saw the touchdowns go down again. We saw the yardage go down. And we saw the interceptions stay at about 13. 13 picks, not awful. I'd say it's probably about average. You want to get below 10. Below 10 is a good year. I don't know. Would you want to move? And then, obviously, filling in the gaps here, as we discussed in the last little block here. Now, reportedly, they're open to a trade for a quarterback. And Goff might be on the move. I mean, if I'm L.A., I mean, obviously, you'd rather have Deshaun Watson, right, if that's on the board. But in terms of Goff versus Stafford, Stafford's better. But Goff is only 27 years old this season. And Matthew Stafford will be playing next season at age 33. Not to mention Matthew Stafford has had some injuries. Played all 16 this year. Injured the year before. He plays through him. He's a tough guy. I mean, this year he goes 26-10. He's been better. The last 5 years, he's been 24-10, 29-10, 21-11, 19-5. They were great last year before he got hurt. 26-10 again. He's Mr. 4,000 yards passing. You can chalk that up every year. He's fairly accurate, hovering around 64%, 65%. Last 6 years, high of 67. He's certainly improved from that first contract with them when they were going, you know, 4-12, 7-9, but he hasn't really been able to take that next step. Goff has as much playoff experience, if not more, actually, than Stafford does. I tend to think it's an improvement, but what's the point? You know, it's one of those never-ending sports conundrums, yeah, where you're going and thinking, do I improve this position just because, if this was a company, I'd always want to improve. And this is a company, it's an organization, we run it like a business. If we can improve, we want to improve. But then it comes down to, all right, well, do we improve at the position with the hometown kid? Take it to another sport. DJ LeMahieu was a free agent for the New York Yankees. Batting title, MVP candidate, second baseman. Or you can go sign a shortstop like an Andrelton Simmons, who's a decent hitter, but will improve your defense greatly. But that'll hurt the hometown kid. Gleyber Torres, the shortstop, you're going to have to move him over. Okay, well, the fans like this guy, and the fans like him, we'll keep them both. It'll keep the people in the seats. It'll keep everyone happy, blah, blah, blah. But if we're operating in a ruthless kind of setting, you know, it might make more sense to make a move like the Rams are considering, where they were considering leaving it open and maybe Walford would win the starting quarterback position. Or maybe you move on from Goff completely and you have a guy like a Matthew Stafford to push Walford, and then Stafford wins the job. You win 10 games. Who knows? I don't think either one of these quarterbacks is elite currently. Maybe Goff can take the next step and get there. I mean, I can't rule anything out, but I don't think necessarily, perhaps with Sean McVay, Stafford would be able to finally graduate into that kind of thing. He's always had the stats for it. He's had the skills for it, but the team around him hasn't really allowed for it. I can understand why they might be interested, but I don't really know. I tend to think the majority of teams that are interested in Stafford would also be interested in Goff and Watson. So we can run through these again if you want, but it's kind of a waste. The only team that obviously would get ruled out is San Francisco because it's in division. And then therefore, you might wonder if a team like the Lions wouldn't consider a one-for-one. You get your young-ish quarterback who has some playoff experience. He's younger, or do you want to start from square one? I don't know what the new staff wants with Dan Campbell. I don't know what the new front office wants, but you wonder if this was Madden football and you're playing with your bros, this might not work for both sides. Hey, you want a new quarterback? Jared Goff, he's still kind of young. He's got a decent skill set. Okay, you want Matt Stafford? You're more of a win-now team than I am. Okay, well, let's make the deal. I wonder. Just floating it out there. Not saying it's likely, just saying it's probable. And then the Texans thing, and we'll talk about this. Deshaun Watson removes everything Texans-related from his social media profiles. J.J. Watt, some are saying that he might have played his last game in Houston as a Texan, NFL Network. And they just hired their coach, literally just hired Culley from Baltimore. And Culley said out explicitly, he knows Deshaun Watson's going to be a Texan. And, you know, I know the famous last words kind of gag, but and then you have the GM, Nick Caserio, saying, before we take a few questions, organizationally we want to reiterate our commitment to Deshaun Watson. We have zero interest in trading the player. I don't know. Brady Quinn says that he thinks Deshaun Watson going to the Jets just wants marketing money. He doesn't actually want to win. You know, he went on to say, Texans have been to the playoffs 6 times. Have the Jets done that of late? Have the Jets won any playoff games? The grass isn't always greener. Shout out to Brady Quinn for staying relevant. I don't know. It's intriguing to me. That kind of concept. It really is. Because at the end of the day, they have control, right? If they want you, if they want you on that team, you signed a contract. You don't really have a choice. You're going to play the Carson Palmer card, play the Carson Palmer card. Let's stop talking about this. It's just a waste of breath. Look, I get it. Everyone's going to be interested. The Bears are going to be big players in the QB market. You're not getting Matt Stafford in division. You're going to get Goff? I think that would kind of be hilarious because, look, as much as I've not believed in a guy like Mitchell Trubisky, you can argue he's just Diet Coke Jared Goff. Jared Goff is good. Jared Goff had a great core around him. Todd Gurley, he had good receivers, not great receivers. You know, you put Goff in a scheme that's a little bit more friendly, where he can lean on the running game like he used to, where he's got good, great receivers around him, like potentially Washington football team. If he can lean on Gibson and he's got Scary Terry and Logan Thomas, who's really taken strides as a tight end, add in one more receiver, maybe two if you're going lower value, higher upside, you might have something there. But with the guys that they have, look, they're not bad receivers in LA, but it's Cooper Kupp, who's a B-tier receiver. It's Robert Woods, who's not a number one. It's Josh Reynolds, who's not a number one. It's Tyler Higbee, who's not an elite tight end. He needs that. I feel like, look, if you put him in a scheme like San Francisco, where he could lean on the running game, throw the ball to Kittle and Debo on the outside, that team could be pushing to the Super Bowl, but you're not making that trade in division. So it's kind of moot. Keeping it on the Watson thing, though, everyone should obviously be interested. Do I think anything's going to happen? Bottom line, I genuinely don't think a trade will occur. However, it's happened before. We saw with Odell Beckham, an elite-level talent getting moved after getting an extension. The difference is this is a quarterback. So what's the haul going to be? You know, if they trade him to the Washington football team, how many picks are they going to want? How many picks are they going to want from San Francisco? From a team like, I don't know. Maybe, and this would be the ultimate maybe, right? This could happen. Now, this is complete spitballing. I have no sources. I have no nothing, just like you do. But consider the following. Let's say, and I've been floating this, and it appears it's not true, but I'll keep floating it. What if a team like Atlanta all of a sudden put Matt Ryan's name in the ring? I think Matt Ryan's every bit as good right now as Matthew Stafford. I think Matthew Stafford's probably a little bit better, but Matt Ryan has been to the Super Bowl, something Matthew Stafford could not claim. Matt Ryan, let's say, gets moved to the Washington football team for, I don't know, would you give up ones at this point for a QB of that age with Super Bowl experience? I mean, it's Ron Rivera. He knows them pretty well. They played in the same division. Let's say they do. Let's say they get some draft picks for Matt. Could Atlanta, who holds a top 10 draft pick, then turn around and call up the Houston Texans and say, we want Deshaun Watson and we're willing to give you all the picks we just got from Washington and our first this year and our first next year? Could that be enough? Because consider the, like I said, consider the following. That would put Deshaun Watson immediately with an elite receiver like he just had in DeAndre Hopkins. That would put him with Julio Jones. That would put him in an offense, a new scheme, brandy new. You know, the offensive coordinator from Tennessee, who was great relying on the running game. And that's something Deshaun really wasn't able to do as much. It put him with Todd Gurley, piecing all these, you know, it's like 6 degrees from, 7 degrees from Kevin Bacon, whatever it is. Pairing him with Todd Gurley, who looked, you know, reinvigorated playing back in Georgia again, where he spent his college years. That team immediately, when you're considering the Saints might be without Drew Brees, and the Panthers are still, with Teddy Bridgewater in the core they have right now, I said free agency notwithstanding, a mediocre team. That Falcons team could right away be the second best team in that division. But do you do all that to be the second best team? I don't know. Just a thought, just put it out there. A couple of teams could consider it. I mean, I doubt Detroit would do something like that. The Rams, if they did pulled off a move like that, would be... It seems like they're one step ahead. That's kind of their thing. That's why they got McVay. And they're always shifting and doing these things. And they're willing to make trades. And they're willing to sign extensions. You put Deshaun Watson on the Rams and, you know, Seattle should be scared. San Francisco should be scared as well, and Arizona. That's my opinion. I don't think that one pulls together, though. I think the pie in the sky, kind of that could be spicy one, for me, is the Atlanta Falcons. But like I said, bottom line, I just don't see it happening. I think he's too valuable of an asset for you to just give up on. You gotta try and salvage it however humanly possible. Genuinely. All right, and that'll take us to almost the end of the episode, really. We'll go to some little asides we have here. Let's see, what else we got? Some news and notes from the week. Obviously, major disappointment in Kansas City about Bienemy not getting a shot. Tyreek Hill, not a GM or anything, but I will say Coach Bienemy has helped me out a lot as a man, a player. It's very shocking he didn't get a job. His time will come. Andy Reid, I was hoping you would have an opportunity to take one of these jobs. I really think it'd be great for any number of these teams that opened up and helped them win football games and develop men into men, whatever developing men into men means. You know, it is what it is with Bienemy. He's not the first OC to get passed over, over and over again, or DC that's affiliated with a big coach. You know, and I was here making the case, as I do, because I'm a fan of Steve Spagnuolo, and I think he offers a lot. That Steve Spagnuolo should get another shake somewhere, even if he won't get his. I think he should, even if he won't. Bienemy will get a shot, I believe, eventually. Worth noting now, just fun fact, Tom Brady 1-9, 9-1 in conference championship games all time against everyone but Peyton Manning. 1-3 versus Peyton Manning in those conference championship games. All those time he eliminated Peyton was in the divisional. When it came to the conference championship, 3-1 Peyton. You talk about big games against the Manning family. Also, by the way, dropped those two rings off at Eli Manning's house. Additionally, speaking of Eli Manning, some quotes here. Eli on Tom Brady. I've never brought up a Super Bowl or our games versus them when we talk. He actually brings it up. Still bothers him a little bit, especially 07 when he had a chance to go down as the greatest of all time. I don't have any bragging rights over Tom. I think you do, buddy. I think you just mentioned them. Either way, good to see Eli Manning back in the news because Eli Manning. Gotta love Eli Manning. Come on now. Come on now. It's just the way it is. Mike Greenberg on the Super Bowl. This is the best quarterback matchup in Super Bowl history. This is like if Michael Jordan got to play LeBron in the finals. I think I disagree slightly. I think, and this is an odd comparison, because look, I think Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time based upon everything that we've seen, right? But I would compare this to if LeBron James was able to beat the Magic in the conference finals and he was able to take... Well, actually, probably it would probably fit a better comparison when he was in Miami. But if he was able to play Kobe Bryant in the finals, because it's two contemporaries. I think Michael, he played the game at such a different kind of time. This is, like, it's the argument there would be Tom Brady versus Montana in the Super Bowl, right? The modern one versus the not ancient legend, but the legend, right? So the legend is Montana. The legend is Jordan. But the modern day GOAT, so to speak, was, you know, it was Kobe Bryant. And they never got to face off. And now it's kind of fantastic that these guys get to face off in a setting like this. I would agree, it might be the best quarterback matchup in the history of the Super Bowl. There have been plenty that have had double Hall of Famers, though. It's a little early for me to call Mahomes a Hall of Famer, but he's certainly on the trajectory. 2 Super Bowl appearances in 3 years. The only year he didn't, he lost a championship game. Oh, by the way, won the MVP. By the way, the MVP curse continues. The MVP has not won the Super Bowl in 22 years. Oh, by the way, while we're oh-by-the-waying, no team that has ever lost to Kirk Cousins in the regular season has ever won a Super Bowl. Curse continues with the Packers' loss. That's my favorite. Some more stats on the Packers while we're bashing them a little bit. Aaron Rodgers, when trailing a team with a winning record by more than 1 point in the fourth quarter, 0-42 in his career. 2 playoff game-winning drives, both against the Dallas Cowboys. He's now 1-4 in conference championship games, 17 fourth quarter comebacks, which the person here says is less than Joe Flacco, 7-8 playoff record since his Super Bowl win, which is, you know, it is what it is, Manning-esque, Peyton Manning-esque, 1-8 when trailing at halftime in the playoffs. I kind of think that Aaron Rodgers is falling into Peyton Manning territory. This is a conversation maybe we'll have another time in the offseason. But, I don't know. I think that with the amount of talent, he might be one of those guys that soon they're going to start calling him, he's the best regular season quarterback. Look at what Mahomes has been able to. And look, I know it doesn't last forever. Look what Russell Wilson did in two, three years and then hasn't been back since, right? So the interesting thing becomes, will this become a trend for Mahomes? Will he be the next Tom Brady? Will he go to 5 Super Bowls in 10 years? Will he go to 8 Super Bowls in whatever? You know what I mean? Like, every year it's going to seem? Or is this just a little blip and he'll wind up like Rodgers as well? I don't know. It's interesting to me. Interesting to me to have that conversation. We'll see. We'll talk about that certainly in the offseason. We definitely will. We definitely will. Yeah. And then what else do we have in the notes here ending the year? We have some more notes on some college football shenanigans we'll talk about closer to the draft. Patrick Mahomes will play in 2 Super Bowls before ever losing an NFL game by more than one possession. Last game he lost by more than one possession was in 2016 versus Iowa State in college. Interesting. Very, very interesting to me. Yeah, so that should bring us pretty much to the end of this episode. We got a couple more little news and notes here. Greg Olsen calling it a career. He had a great one. Cole Beasley played on a broken leg at some point in this season, which is kind of nuts. Super Bowl to have 22,000 fans. Obviously, a little late for that one. Anthony Lynn will be Detroit's OC. Pretty good hire, IMO. Houston winds up going, obviously, with their new head coach. They wind up, instead of the reported interviews, which was Leslie Frazier and Eric Bieniemy, they wind up going with Culley from Baltimore. We know we had Philly going to Sirianni before. What else we got here? Interesting one to bring up, and we're going to talk about this a little bit closer to the Combine, but we're having the Senior Bowl, but the Combine can't be in person. I guess it's just cut down on travel, but that's kind of intriguing to me. How are you going to have the Senior Bowl but not the Combine? I mean, all right, whatever. I guess the Combine's more for us than for them then, but, like, it's really not, because they always, I've heard multiple scouts talk about how senior, you know, pro days at their college, which they're still going to have, pro days aren't really as indicative, you know, because it's kind of more friendly and it's less pressure. They're in a normal environment. You know, Combine is much more sterile. It's like a lab environment. How are you going to do in a lab environment? Whatever. Either way, you know. Jason Witten calling it a career. Good for Jason. You know. Scotty Miller thinks he's faster than Tyreek Hill. Not interested. Don't care. Don't think it's true. Either way, who cares? So in the concluding parts of this episode, I think I just want to scroll through the years and kind of look through the things we've been able to talk about and the things we've accomplished. Obviously, our record in picking games has been kind of stagnant, but it's gotten pretty decent. You know, you take a look as I go through my notes, we were really in-depth in the notes at the beginning. I like to think that I've gotten a little bit more fluid and the show's gotten better. If you've been around this long, I really appreciate you. If you haven't, you know, I like to think you're getting the best version of the show. And, you know, if you'll be here in another 100 episodes, I think the show will be even better. And you'll be getting an even better version of the show. You know, you take a look and maybe, you know, some of the things that we got right, you know, we got, let's see, we had TJ Watt as a defensive rookie of the year, and TJ Watt is now a superstar, you know, a couple of things that we had, and we've been on for so long, there's so many random things that we've done. We did Captain Hindsight things. We did, you know, 62nd pick of the week. It's, we've really had a long run, and it's, I don't know, guys. It's really, not trying to be, you know, sappy with you, but had no idea that it would last this long, and I really appreciate the opportunity I've been given by Last Word on Sports, and appreciate the opportunity you've given me to bring me into your home just by listening to this episode. Like I always say, and I say it ad nauseum, and I'm sure you're sick of it. If it's your first episode or your last episode, I appreciate you just the same, and I hope I'll see you in the next episode. So with that, we're not going to waste too much time. We've already been here over an hour. There's no game this week. We didn't rip the Pro Bowl. We ripped the Pro Bowl enough last week. If you want me to rip the Pro Bowl, look through the category. Go to my website, nickdonatic.com, spelled the same as the description. Go down and control F the word Pro Bowl. We rip the Pro Bowl every year. They're not even playing it this year, so we're going to give them a year off. We're not going to rip it. We're going to talk awards next week. We're going to talk Super Bowl preview next week. Maybe we'll have some more breaking news on these quarterbacks. We've already discussed it ad nauseum, if I'm being completely honest with you. I am excited to see the possibilities. We'll talk off-season. We've got next week's episode. then the following, then we'll jump into an off-season schedule. We'll talk about that when we get there. That'll be the Saturday after the Super Bowl, obviously. We'll pick the Super Bowl next week. I hope you guys are excited. It's been quite the NFL season. It's been quite the year. Weird 2020. We're jumping into 2021 feet first just to see what happens, because why not? Either way, you know what that means. That's the end of episode number 100, the centennial special of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. Join us next Saturday afternoon for the following episode. Join us for the next 100 episodes if you can. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.